following is a presentation of Learfield IMG College. From the Georgia Southern Sports Network, powered by Learfield IMG College.
Wings up, Eagle Nation! Touchdown, Georgia Southern!
This is Inside Eagle Nation, your all-access look into Eagle athletics.
Taking a look through all the other action in Georgia Southern athletics this past week. A lot of road action. A lot of teams hitting the old I-16 out of town.
Getting on the steel horse and taking us to parts north, south, west, wherever. Can't really go too much farther east.
Now let's return to the Learfield IMG College studios. Here are your hosts, Colin Lacey and Danny Reed.
That's a fact, Jack.
Welcome into another edition of Inside Eagle Nation, episode number 136. We're live here from Allen E. Paulson Stadium, continuing our summer where we are trying out some new digs and trying out some new things throughout the summer. But Colin Lacey alongside Danny Reed for another edition of Inside Eagle Nation. As always, Inside Eagle Nation presented by our good friends at Arcola Septic. Arcola Septic is your premier septic services provider to Bullock, Bryan, and 20 counties, and a great family-owned business that's run by a pair of Georgia Southern alumni. Make sure to give them a call at 912-318-7939. Or visit them online at arcolaseptic.com for both commercial and residential customers. Their more than 10 years of experience can help you out with pumping and servicing your septic system, drain field repairs, new system installation, and all of your septic needs. Remember to follow them on Facebook, Arcola Septic, yesterday's Meals on Wheels. So we sit here on June 29th. Happy birthday, Terry Harvin, by the way.
Is that today?
It surely is.
No wonder he won't answer anything. Happy birthday, Terry. I completely forgot.
Today is Terry's birthday, so happy birthday to the boss man now.
We won't say what number it is. You could just add that up if you want to.
I think just I know.
Go from 1990, add 31. You can figure it out for yourself.
But we are just a couple of days away from officially the athletic calendar switching from the 2020-2021 year to the 2021-2022
thank
year.
Thank God.
Yeah, thankfully. 2020-2021 was a, we'll say it was a interesting year, a trying year. There's a lot of different adjectives you could use about the 2020-2021 athletic calendar year. But at the end of the day, you look on it, there were only a couple volleyball matches canceled, one basketball game canceled, which men's basketball had added a game, so y'all kind of come out in the wash. Women's basketball missed two series with Coastal Carolina. But outside of that, you played everything as if it was a normal year on paper. Now, outside, I know we had different locations. We were doing a lot of different things, but I think looking back on it, and I was thinking about it this morning as we were getting ready for this, that athletic calendar year was a lot more normal than we thought it could be this time last year.
You could have been a Pac-12 school that played four football games.
Yeah.
You could have been an Old Dominion who didn't play a single football game last fall, and that's a program that's done pretty well over the last 15 years or so. You could have been any one of the roughly 100 basketball schools that lost a month's worth of games. You could have been a baseball school which was back and forth on, can we get vaccinated without losing time? Can we keep guys healthy? Can we play those 40 to 45 games? It was definitely a draining year physically, emotionally, mentally. I don't know that I've ever felt as drained after a year. I mean, look, we go 10 months strong from the start of football through the end of baseball, and there's always that amount of time at the end where you just need a couple of days to let it go out of you and then think about how to close things out and get ready for the next year. But as you're going through it, you don't realize how much you have to put into it for games that may not even have gotten played. Football, we were incredibly fortunate. Basketball, just about as much. And for baseball, outside of Georgia and Georgia Tech missing a game there, it was pretty close to what we were hoping for. Not counting all of the oh, here we go again. Is this going to happen? Are we going to have to wait? Are we going to get this delayed? You know, Campbell had us kind of messed up even more so because it was the first event, and then we had to wait 45 minutes because of the rain and the lightning delay. That one gets completely.
That.
Remember, they had to get everybody out of the stadium. A lot of people were huddling up underneath, and if they had to go out, do they have to come back in? Because that was the first event with COVID-19 protocols. Not to mention the clear bag stuff that had come in the year before. Like, do I need my mask? Can I have this? Can I have that? Where can I sit? Can we get 6,250 people in here and still have a football game? You could write a book about every season that we do, but this particular year, you might need to add a couple of more chapters. But we got through it.
And when you look at what Georgia Southern was able to do, we talked about just the couple of tweaks of a schedule, a couple of cancellations throughout the year, and that's not just football. We've talked about what football was able to do, but that's everything. That's all of Georgia Southern athletics, and we've talked about it time and time again, whether it be with Jared, with Chris, with different coaches. The medical staff that Georgia Southern has that have overseen everything, whether that be Macon Occupational Medicine, Brandy Klaus, Chloe, different people that had their hands in it that don't get the recognition that they deserve. It's been a group effort, and yes, you're still going to have a little bit of that. NC State got to see that this weekend with the College World Series, which
awful.
We'll get into that a little bit later on. But when you look at what Georgia Southern was able to do, it's one of those Georgia Southern didn't have something that made a national headline for something that was so outside the realm of what normal was that it caused to be a news story, if that makes sense.
You're one of two teams in the country that plays 12 regular season games. The other one, as we know, was Texas State. You're the only team in the country that played 13 a normal way. 12 regular season, bowl game. Alabama is the only other one that played 13, but remember, they needed an extra round in the college football playoff because they only played 10 in the regular season, all SEC scheduled. They had the SEC championship, so they got the 13, and then, of course, they win the national championship in dominant fashion over Ohio State. But to think about all that could have gone wrong, and remember, there was a pause. Georgia Southern football did have a brief pause towards the end of camp, end of August, and at that point you were wondering, okay, is the game against Campbell going to be in question? Is the season going to be in question? Because at that point, we didn't know it was only going to last 5 days just because of a couple positive tests and then the contact tracing, which all the schools, they handle it every different way. There's no standardized system. That's kind of how you have to do it. There's no way you can add this umbrella for everybody. And if you want to go a little bit deeper on that, you've got the NIL that's starting on July 1st, which 12 states have laws that are enacted so players can begin profiting off name, image, and likeness. Georgia's one of those states, so it could begin as soon as Thursday. Some teams are saying it won't begin for a couple more months because schools need time to figure out how they're going to process this, how you're going to be able to report it, how that's all going to work out. So it's going to be an extension of a very fascinating time in college athletics. But getting back to the idea of how COVID just interrupted everything and became the story when you wanted to talk about Shai Wirtz's fourth consecutive year as the starting quarterback, Kendrick Duncan trying to come back from injury. What was that backfield going to look like? J.D. King was leading the league in rushing before tearing his ACL against Troy. He still led the league in rushing 3 weeks later, getting into the end of the season. Now you've got him back. You've got another loaded backfield. Of course, it's going to be a new quarterback, but I sat in this booth. We were all that first day against Campbell, and we were wondering if we were going to have a kickoff.
Yeah.
Because I talked the day before with Chris Haymeyer, the voice of Campbell, and we were both going through the two deep saying, okay, he's out, he's out. And I don't remember ever having to do it to that detail talking with another radio guy or another broadcast guy.
Yeah.
You knew that you were going to trade information about guys that may not play, but never to that detail when Georgia Southern was without 33 guys, 15 in the two deep. I think Campbell ended up being without 7 or 8 of their guys. One of them was a standout wide receiver who I think was an All-American the year before, and you're wondering, God, is this going to be every week?
Yeah.
You're going to have to cross out guys in the two deep every week? You're going to be able to play 3-4 games? Is there going to be a season? Are these just going to become glorified exhibitions? And then we're going to find out in October. Okay, that was all well and good for a couple of weekends. But with bad weather coming in, cold and flu season, in addition to COVID, how much worse can it get? But we weathered it all. Testing weekly became kind of a nuisance, but it was a necessary evil to let us do what we had to do. That first flight to Louisiana, it was nerve-wracking. Had 150 people on a charter plane. Every one of them was wearing masks, thinking, okay, we're all kind of in this cauldron here. Is somebody going to catch this despite everybody supposedly testing negative and wearing masks? Because you didn't know. And then going to another school, like that game at Cajun Field, everybody's got a mask on. I mean, the first time we'd seen Jay in a while, he had the plastic mask up like he was an animal veterinarian. We only saw him for a couple minutes because they had to stay in their area. We had to stay in ours, having to fly again the next week to ULM. But as we continued to do it, more and more comfortable, safer, responsible, and somehow December the 23rd, we ended up in the biggest stadium that we could have imagined playing a bowl game against Louisiana Tech. And fortunately, that turned out to be a nice reward for all of those guys taking personal responsibility to give themselves a chance to do that.
We've mentioned it a couple of times over the year, but as we get into the new athletic year, it's going to be interesting to see what stays and what goes back to normal. Because I think there's going to be a lot of things that you tried out and you had to do during COVID that you realized, hey, this might be a little bit easier.
Yeah.
Like, I wonder if Zoom press conferences are going to become a norm. I wonder if in college football, we talked about it when it came out at Campbell in the inactive list, if that's going to become more of a norm of everybody like the NFL in the 90-minute meeting, you have to exchange an inactive list. I wonder if that's going to become more of a norm like it has in the NFL. There's a lot of different things that could become new normal that only happened because of COVID.
And in the case of a Georgia Southern, when you're in Statesboro, your biggest market, relatively speaking, is Savannah, which, as we know, is 45 minutes to an hour away. And we know that for all of our media that cover us, that's asking a lot to give up 2-3 hours out of a Monday for a press conference when they can log on to a Zoom. Now, after the game's a little bit different because you're probably coming here to cover a game anyway. Yeah. We know that a year ago they had to stay, if you can see across the field, they had to stay up above the railing. Nobody was getting into the locker room. Limited access onto Field of Dreams because those were protocols that had just been put in place. We didn't know for how long that those were going to last. But I think that Zoom is here to stay. I think virtual press conferences, while they were done in some ways, you always had virtual meetings.
Yeah.
But that idea has exploded. I think that there are going to be innovations about that that are going to be here to stay, and I think that that's going to improve even more. You can't underestimate the concept of person-to-person contact, and from our standpoint, our weekly meetings with coaches and players, the other broadcasters, because some weren't traveling, especially during basketball season. The lucky thing for us is that during the coaches' shows, we still were able to do a show. Granted, we were socially distanced. We had, whether it was Chad or Brian across the table from us, we couldn't get too close to the players, the ones that we could have on, the weeks that we could have them on. Now, the hope is that we'll have a place to do it live for this athletic season. We know that the podcast is going to move to Monday nights. So I would think that there is going to be some change, but you hope that it will be relative to experiencing that former normal. But we'll have to continue to sort all that out as, you know, I'm sure there are more variants that are floating out there, and there's going to be a little bit of fear regardless of how much we do to try to get COVID not to be such an important part of our lives. But if you have the vaccine, you know you're probably going to be safe. And we also know that people can make that decision. If they want to get it, that's up to them. If they don't, that's up to them. But I would think that the compelling factor for teams, players, and coaches this year, starting with football, if for some reason you have to miss a game because of COVID protocols / contact tracing, there's no rescheduling this year. That goes down as a forfeit. So let's think about this. September the 4th against Gardner-Webb. Let's say Georgia Southern, for whatever reason, has COVID issues. If it's generated by Georgia Southern that they cannot play, that would go down as a forfeit, and they would lose that game to Gardner-Webb.
It's going to be interesting to see what the next athletic calendar year looks like. But as we dive into a couple of news notes this week in Georgia Southern Athletics, one news note for us, Inside Eagle Nation is now available on Amazon Music. The partner that we use, Art19, partnering with Amazon Music, so you can take Inside Eagle Nation to your Amazon as well.
I know a couple people that will benefit right away.
You use Amazon Music?
Not personally, but I do know a couple people that have.
Okay. Also got a new addition to Eagle Nation is Caroline Beto, the new assistant coach for Chris Adams in Georgia Southern Women's Soccer. She was a volunteer at Auburn after playing a graduate year for them after she played 4 years at UCF, the newest addition to Eagle Nation.
We've had that connection with Auburn for a long time now. Of course, we can go back recently to Chris Davis coming over after being the general manager of Auburn Sports Properties at Division of Fox Sports. But think back to the genesis of Georgia Southern's football program. Irk Russell helped coach at Auburn for Shug Jordan, went to Auburn. He was the last four-sport letterman. You could take Jim Dye, put him in that category. Vance Pike, great offensive tackle, passed away a few years ago, played at Auburn before transferring to Georgia Southern. Just a couple of the many, many connections that the Eagles have to the Plains, and we welcome her and hope that she can join Coach Adams and have nothing but success here.
Speaking of Auburn, Chris Davis this past week was selected to attend the Top Connect AD Conference in 2021. It's a leadership symposium for aspiring Division I ADs, and it's something that we've talked about with Jared a lot. Everybody that he has brought into this athletic department, there's a lot of them that aspire to become Division I athletic directors, and I think that's something to be said for the leadership that Georgia Southern has right now.
And for Chris, somebody who has spent a number of years at Auburn, spent some time in Nebraska, he is gaining all of this experience from an administrative standpoint. We know that he has dealt with multimedia rights for a long time, but in his role as the deputy athletics director, he has his hands in a lot of different cookie jars.
Yeah.
We see him as the administrative rep for football, and we see him just about everywhere on campus. I mean, when you pinned him down to be able to do the summer check-in, to get him to sit still is not an easy thing, but for somebody that has to bounce around as much as he does, have to care about as many things as he does, and be as genuine as he is a remarkable asset, and we're lucky to have him here.
Had another All-Sun Belt team come out for Georgia Southern football, the Phil Steele. I got my Bible yesterday.
This is it. This is what we use.
This is it. This is the Bible. Already got the tab. We're good. I got mine yesterday. Have you gotten yours yet?
I got mine few days ago.
Ah, you beat me.
I haven't had a chance to go through a lot of it yet. I've been reading a couple of other things, but I've got it open to the Sun Belt pages. I got my highlighter ready, so we both have a lot of things going on over the next couple of weeks, so we'll try to fill in the cracks and be able to get ready for the season, get ready for Media Day, which is less than a month from now, and we'll get that all taken care of.
We'll catch up with Phil as we get closer to kickoff, but the All-Sun Belt team, courtesy of Phil Steele, comes out with the magazine. The first team selection at cornerback was Derek Canteen.
Not a surprise.
No. Georgia Southern had three second-teamers, J.D. King at running back, Anthony Beck at punter, and Caleb Hood for punt returner. Had two third-team guys and Aaron Dowdell on the offensive line and C.J. Wright on the defensive line. And then four fourth-team guys, Amari Jones at running back, Brian Miller at O-line, Justin Ellis, the defensive end, and Randy Wade Jr. at outside linebacker. And one that I think kind of flies under the radar, Amari Jones at running back.
Eagles fly, good.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Wasn't named for that. But Amari Jones at running back, he's already a preseason fourth-team All-Sun Belt pick, and he hasn't played a snap in the Sun Belt. Transfer in from Tulane, but he hasn't played a snap in the Sun Belt. Yet he's already a fourth-team guy.
You remember J.D. King getting that kind of attention when he came in for the 2019 season, transferring from Oklahoma State, and he had limited action for the Cowboys for a couple of years. Jones' best season with Tulane was in 2019. He was an all-purpose guy. They were trying to get him the football a number of different ways. He was an outstanding kick returner. Numbers took a bit of a dip last year, but that was because of injury. So the assumption is he's healthy. You got him and Caleb Hood back to return kicks. I'm good with that. I'm very good with that, and you know that they have been very creative trying to figure ways to get Caleb the football with Doug Roos taking over full-time as the offensive coordinator. Look what Caleb does. He returns a punt for a touchdown against FAU, has a 65-yard touchdown catch against Louisiana Tech in the bowl game. You throw Amari Jones into the mix with everybody that is already in the backfield. This should be an offense that will not be short on weapons.
No, I would assume not. We will dive deeper into what the X's and O's, and as Frank Zolkowski says, the Jimmies and Joes, as we get closer to football season. But that was one wanted to bring up.
He's back on weather detail, I saw.
Yeah, he was chasing after you.
Yeah, guys, I apologize for the tropical storm. I was only expecting a little bit of rain. I didn't think it was going to make the oranges and the reds show up on the map, but everybody's all right. We got a beautiful day here today, so I think we're okay.
It's one of the few storms in the history that has waken me up.
It was coming down pretty good last night.
Yeah, it was. But as we move into the summer check-in portion of this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation, going to switch it up a little bit. Throughout the summer, we talked about we were going to be checking in with the different programs for Georgia Southern Athletics and talking with their head coaches and different people around. We talked to Chris Davis earlier this year, talked to John Murphy with men's soccer, Chris Adams with women's soccer. But one place that we haven't checked in a while is our crew. And so throughout the summer, we're going to be checking in with Frank once he gets off weather detail. Russ up in Macon, going to check in with Terry whenever he has a moment, but
wait a minute.
Yeah. We're going to check in with them later.
Okay, so we're going to do this
process of
now.
Elimination.
All right.
We're checking in with you. So we've talked about highlighting your Phil Steele magazine and getting ready to move, but what does the summer look like for the voice of the Eagles?
This year it was more of the definitely taking a couple more days of just letting the season go out. And look, we don't like having to say that the last thing that we did was a Sun Belt Baseball Championship loss, but it's the fourth time in the last five tournaments it has happened. Getting to that point where you can touch a championship trophy only to see the other team do it, it's not a great way to end a season. So maybe from that perspective, it takes maybe a little bit longer to let it just drain out of you, and then you can figure out how you want to wrap up the previous season and move ahead to the next year. But you throw in for the previous 10 months of how we always had the cloud of COVID hanging over us. Was it going to pour down? Was it going to just storm and knock us out of our booth? Were we even going to be able to do our jobs? But once all of that passes, look, we get this 2 to 3 month pause before we get back into football season. Well, really, that first coach's show to get ready for football season. But what I like to do is that week after is to go back over all the things that we tabulate throughout the course of the year. This is all three sports that we cover. Just close things out. If there's any records set, if there's any trends that we've been keeping track of, if there are any records that were broken, we make sure to take note of those and then kind of translate that into what this coming year will look like. And for instance, for Georgia Southern football and for really a lot of teams across all athletics, and maybe you could take away the spring sports, is how much everybody's going to have coming back for the fall and the winter sports. Because last year was the mulligan year, the COVID year, where you could play as much as you wanted to, but eligibility-wise, you get that year back. And I think we made the comment last week about Phil Steele that of the 130 Division I teams, 128 of them have at least three starting offensive linemen coming back.
Good grief.
And then 110 of them have four coming back. And in the case of Georgia Southern, you could make the case that they've got five starters back. Yeah, Drew Wilson is gone, but seven different guys started a game up front last year, and five of those guys started at least six games. So you could make the case that Georgia Southern has entire starting lineup back with Langmeier at center, Dowdell at left guard. They started all 13 games. You add in Amari Jones in the backfield, Wesley Kennedy, not in the mix at this point, but J.D. King is coming back off of injury. Logan Wright exploded back half of last year. Defensively, you do take away Raynard Ellis and Rashad Bird in the middle. You lose Raymond Johnson up front, but the secondary is in good shape, even with Kendrick Duncan transferring to Louisville. So that's just what we're looking at with football, but also closing things out basketball-wise, transitioning towards the fall because you're going to try to get ready for two sports at the same time. And then once basketball starts, you got to get stuff ready for baseball because that creeps up even more quickly, having to do baseball for a month while basketball hopefully goes deeper into March if we can make it back to the NCAA tournament in both of our cases since we're covering both the men and women. So you're at the same time finishing last year, starting next year, mixing in a little bit of rest where you can.
Now, something we've talked about a lot over the years is you're the numbers guy. Between the two of us, you are definitely the numbers guy. Where did your, I'm not going to say love and affinity for numbers, but where did your kind of fascination with numbers start?
I've just always been really good at math. Growing up, I really enjoyed math. I enjoyed social studies. It became history and government once we got into high school. And my grandfather, somebody that was always really good with numbers, he enjoys playing lottery, Maryland State Lottery. He's done that for over 40 years now. But he would have a sheet where he would track all the numbers that would get played. And he was convinced that there was a system that he could figure out what number was going to play on the next night. And every couple of months, he would get it right because he was convinced that he could see this trend. This hasn't gone here. This might go here, even though it's totally random. But he was convinced that there was a way that he could find out that he could win. And he's actually fairly successful for something that's completely up in the air. And I spent a lot of time with him growing up. Just we had that love of numbers, and I realized that I could add stuff, multiply stuff, divide stuff. I could do that pretty quickly. And just going to grade school and then high school, I didn't have a chance to do much with it in college just because that wasn't part of my major. I ended up taking a placement test, so I didn't need that requirement to graduate from college. But numbers were always just something that I enjoyed, and just the years, the stats, knowing dates, it's something that I can just recall, and that's just something I've always been able to do.
All right, kind of along the same line, we've talked about it before when we did Beyond the Bio with you that you started in broadcasting doing Little League Baseball, but where did the kind of fascination for broadcasting and wanting to get into it come from?
Playing video games when I was probably in grade school, and it was either the college football game from EA Sports or the one of the early John Madden games or the NFL 94-95. I think it was the one with Joe Montana on the cover, and I know he was on the cover because it was when he made the move to Kansas City after winning Super Bowls with the 49ers. And I would listen to the commentary during the video game, and eventually I would talk with them. Eventually I would turn that down and just do it myself. And then I would go to games that I wasn't playing in, watching the high school that I would eventually go to, Bishop Walsh in Cumberland, Maryland, and I would just sit there and if I knew the players' names, if I didn't, I would make them up, and a lot of times people would turn and say, what in the hell is he doing? It wasn't like I was over the loudspeaker or anything, but it's just something that I always really enjoyed and kept on doing it, realized I enjoyed it even more, and I got a chance to work with people locally who saw that I enjoyed it and wanted to give me some chances and to be able to do it. Not necessarily professionally, but on a platform where I know other people were going to be listening to it. For instance, the first time I ever did stats for the local radio station was the annual homecoming game in my hometown. The two public schools in Cumberland, Maryland, Allegheny High School and Fort Hill, they share the same home field, and homecoming every year is against the other. So, you know how Georgia Southern technically has a homecoming. High schools have homecoming all the time. These two shared the idea of homecoming. It was always the last game of the season.
So one game, two homecomings.
Correct. Greenway Avenue Stadium would be packed every year. It's one of the nicest high school stadiums in the entire state of Maryland. You'd get anywhere from 10,000 to 15,000 people there. Some of the best games. In fact, I think that NFL Films called it one of the best high school rivalries in the country. I think that I want to say that was 5 or 10 years ago, but they did a special feature about high school rivalries, and the Fort Hill Allegheny game was one of them. So to get a chance to do stats for that game when I was a junior in high school was a pretty important deal for me. And I didn't know that they were going to let me talk during halftime, and I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to speak now, and there's going to be people actually listening instead of the people that I'm just around or the people that are in my house. But from there, it just kept on growing, kept on watering the plant, it kept on growing, getting to do the Little League Baseball. That's how I got my job with the Charleston River Dogs, and 13 years later, we're doing a podcast and talking about it.
All right, so what was your first football broadcast? Like, you're the guy doing it. What was the first football broadcast? I know I'm having you go back in the memory bank on a spot here, but
I think the first time I actually did a football game play-by-play would have been the fall of 2008 when I was in Charleston. This is my first year in Charleston. I just finished up as the assistant broadcaster with the Charleston River Dogs, and that was the year that Josh Maurer, who was the number one, ended up going to UMass. I slid in and did the rest of the season. But that off season, the local radio station had a high school package where they needed a play-by-play guy. And the first game that I did was Northwood Academy against Porter Gow. This was a South Carolina independent school, so it wasn't double, triple, or anything. And it's one of the craziest, maybe the craziest plays I've ever seen live. It was Porter Gow was at its 25-yard line, had a snap go over the quarterback's head, go all the way into the end zone.
Good.
all 22 people on the field. I'm not convinced there weren't people running out of the crowd to go get the ball, but somehow Porgott's tight end, William Hyman, picks up the ball in the end zone. He goes 105 yards the other way for a touchdown. Now, it was only a 75-yard score, but snap goes into the end zone. Tight end picks it up, ends up coming up the near sideline, goes all the way for a touchdown.
I don't know what's more impressive about that. One, the fact that it happened, or two, that you remember the guy's name that did it.
Number 88. You don't forget something like that.
I forgot his name already. Good grief.
But think, okay, I'm looking at Paulson Stadium. Uh-huh. You can picture a snap going from the 25 all the way into the end zone. Picture Bo Johnson or Chase Hancock picking up the ball in the middle of the end zone and running all the way for a touchdown the other way.
All right.
Just picture that.
All right.
You're not going to forget that.
No, okay. I believe you. There's a story that just happened a couple of days ago, and you told it when you were speaking down in Savannah at Kerry Hilliard's of everybody knows you and I are moving in the next couple of weeks, but as I'm going through my stuff, I find an old artifact.
Yeah, this.
Go ahead and tell that one.
This killed me, that you found your 2015 day planner, and it just so happened that it was opened up to the month of August, which was a pretty big month for me personally and for the future of our network. And on August 20th, you had written down the four people that were going to be interviewing for this job that day and the times that they were going to be interviewing.
You were the 2 o'clock?
Yeah.
Because I think there was one at 1, 1.30, 2, and 2.30.
And then I told the story about how I was going to go back to my apartment to do the interview. The internet crapped out, so I had to drive all the way back to the office with my stuff, because that's when people still use Skype. Put that back on my work computer. It was 1:59. Wipe the sweat off. I see the call coming in from Tom Kleinlein, and then a couple months later, I was here. But it was a few days later that Tom Bowman sent me the text to say you'd be available for conference call around 4 o'clock, and none of y'all would answer me.
Nope.
About what was going. And then Draper finally did.
Now, in our defense, part of it was us just messing with you, yes.
Because all didn't know me that well.
No.
I'd known Chris for a few years, and I'd known Terry, Russ, Frank a little bit. I knew you a little bit, but it wasn't like it is now.
Yeah, but we knew you well enough.
Yeah.
And so, we were messing with you a little bit. I'm not going to lie.
This is August 24th, 2015.
But we were also told not to say anything. So we were following instructions while also...
I didn't tell that part last week. Yes, they were followed instructions. That's why nobody said anything.
We were following instructions that we weren't supposed to say anything. And then finally, I don't know if Draper got tired of you blowing up his phone.
No, if there was somebody that was going to answer, it was going to be either Chambers or Draper.
Yeah,
I was convinced that it was going to be one of those two, and it was Draper that finally answered. My interview was supposed to be, or my conference call was going to be at 4 o'clock with Tom. And he said, "Oh, you got the 4 o'clock, huh?"
That was it. That was it. He didn't answer again.
Say another word. I get to the ballpark and then get the actual call. It's a good one. Get offered the job. And a couple weeks later, I'm down here.
Then you were packing up your car, driving down here just to unload and go to Idaho.
Well, the first game was here against the Citadel, which was ironic in and of itself. But then the next weekend, we were traveling out to Lewiston. And that's a trip that I will never, ever forget.
Yeah, whether it was your first one or whether it was number 56 or 104, you're not going to forget that one.
Because you don't get a chance. If you're in Georgia, you don't get a whole lot of shot to go to Idaho.
No, and we knew it was going to be good whenever we ended up driving up to Washington State's football stadium. And didn't we park inside the stadium?
Parked underneath the stands, found the door to their facility, and Frank kind of took it from there saying, "Hey, I'm here to see Coach Leach."
Coach Leach had recruited his brother.
Was in his house, in his living room.
Something about he jumped rope in Frank's living room.
So Frank takes the lead, and the secretary says, "Oh, yeah, just go right up." I mean, she's not knowing who's up, not knowing who we are. But the six of us are just walking around, and I remember Chris saying, "Boys, what are we doing up here?" We finally get upstairs, and none of the coaches are there. So Frank ends up leaving a note on Leach's door, whether he wrote him back or not.
I think he called him. I think Leach called him like the next week.
Okay.
Whenever they got back.
I never remember that. But I knew Frank has a copy of his book and the Swing Your Sword book, and Frank always talks about loving Coach Leach.
One more thing before we wrap up the summer check-in with Danny Reed. One thing we talk about a lot is getting to meet so many people and so many people becoming like family to us, whether it's our crew, whether it's Brant and Bill out in Texas State, Jay down at Louisiana. How important is that to you? And I know the answer to this, but...
Yeah, you know.
I know the answer to this, but people don't know. They probably do, but say it anyway. How important is that of getting to know people on that kind of level? Because it's not just your typical coworkers. And yes, we may see each other once, twice a year, but it's not your typical coworkers. And I think that gets lost in translation a lot.
And that's what makes you think that, okay, you're seeing guys that live in states that are a couple time zones away, 1,000 miles away. You might see them casually. It's not something that's all that meaningful. But growing up, I'm an only child. I never had brothers or sisters. I was born in 85, and I guess always wanted that feeling of having brothers, because I didn't grow up with it. And sometimes it may have come off as been a little bit socially awkward, but to me that's the way that I knew it. That's why I feel so close to the friends that I make. And I know that in a lot of cases, whether it's Louisiana, Alabama, Texas, Arkansas, or whatever, it's a closeness with all of these guys because we're all doing the same things. We're all trying to go through it the same way. We might have different circumstances about where we are and how we're trying to do it, but we're all trying to do the same thing, give people a reason to feel passionate about their school, follow these players, follow this program. And at Georgia Southern, it feels like it's multiplied by a million just with all that's happened here in such a short amount of time. But I think about Brant and Bill at Texas State, Josh at UT Arlington, Matt out at Arkansas State, Barry and Jerry at Troy, Jay in Louisiana. Joe at Coastal, we only get to see him for football. But
and then when he does our game for baseball.
He annually is.
He's the Georgia Southern voice of Coastal Carolina.
And the fact that last summer when we didn't know that it was not going to be a Sun Belt Football Media Day, for us to have 3 Zoom calls with everybody in the league.
Yeah.
I know the SEC guys did one like that, and I think that Learfield hopped on and made that more of a blow up. And
they were more buttoned up than we were.
They were a little bit more buttoned up than we were. We don't let people, just anybody in. These are special invitation to get into these. But the fact that we could get everybody from the league to give a couple hours just to say, hey, what's going on? It's not just that, oh, hey, we're going to Troy this week, get a chance to talk with Barry for 10 minutes, or we're going to ULM to talk with Nick and Mike Hammett about what's been going on with them. There's a very special bond that I think that we all have, and to know that we can contribute to that is really meaningful. And I think about the roundtable that we did right before the baseball tournament this year. That's I don't know that I'm prouder of anything that we've done on the network.
Yeah.
And that includes the 2018 football season. We had a chance to watch Tyler Bass win it with, you know, the field goal at the Camellia Bowl. But to show Eagle Nation and to show all of our fan bases how passionate we are about what we do and how passionate we are about each other, I think that was a pretty important deal for me personally.
You talk about those Zoom calls. Even the one that Barry McKnight couldn't get on, he sent a video saying, miss you guys and all that.
And he just conveniently was polishing all of his Troy Sun Belt championship rings.
Right.
And hey, fellas, I got my rings in. Just, you know, things that are special to him. Yes, Barry, you're very special to us, too.
At some point, we've got to do a roundtable of all of our broadcasting friends around the league. And not to talk about Sun Belt broadcasting, but just so people can put the real voices to the voices that you do. Because that was one of the best things that Aaron Soka got to experience this year. His first time really traveling with us with baseball. And he got to meet Barry McKnight on a more personal level and realize that that's spot on. I think Jay Walker, that was one of his favorites. Brad Topham, that was awesome. But the fact of getting to watch Soka meet these people that he's heard from you is a lot of fun.
As broadcasters, we have to be observant. We have to tell people, especially on the radio,
right?
We have to tell people what's going on because they may not be able to see it unless they don't have it synced up. So we translate that to just people that we know and observing other people and the mannerisms that make them who they are, and just impressions are just always something that I've enjoyed. And some people take it the wrong way. Most people take it in the right way. And they're like, okay, you got me. That's what I do. You got me.
We just have to have a round table of you speaking in somebody's voice and then them saying the same thing and seeing how close you are, because I'm pretty sure you're going to knock out most of them.
See, Jay Walker down in Louisiana can't stand it because he knows it's spot on.
Oh, for sure.
He just looks me.
Because your impressions have gotten some good stories out of them. Just from the fact of when we were at Troy, we're at Mossy Grove's schoolhouse, you're doing your Barry McKnight impression for the waitress, and then I'll be darned if Barry McKnight doesn't walk in three steps behind us.
And we went back there before baseball this year. Sylvia was still there. And she said, oh, you're that boy that does the Barry McKnight voice. Well, you sit right on over here.
Yep, you caught me.
And she was bringing us hush puppies, it seemed, every 10 seconds.
She brought us.
And she just kept saying, hey. Do Barry's voice.
Between that and then in the 2017 conference tournament for baseball when everybody came to Statesboro and we went to dinner with Brant and Bill, and for the first time you did your Brant for Bill and your Bill for Brant, and Bill Colhane almost fell under the table. He was laughing so hard. That's one of my favorite memories.
Well, we had to entertain ourselves because we had a lot of rain that week.
Oh, yeah, we did. That was a long week.
But we have a lot of fun together. We make it a point whenever we go somewhere to try to have as much fun as we can, and the game is really the undercard. It's the going to dinner, spending time the day or the evening before that's what makes these relationships special, and that's what makes being in this league so special.
Yeah. Speaking of meals, that leads us into our You Pick this week, coming from Aaron. He wants to know your favorite 4th of July meal. That's when you got to sit back and think. Goodness gracious.
Well, Colin, I've had a lot of fourth. No, I'm not that old.
By the way, before we get into meals, Daryl Lynn said in 2018 in the baseball tournament when you did your Barry narrating paint drying was pretty funny. I don't remember that.
That was 19. That was up at Coastal.
You did Barry narrating paint drying?
Yeah, because I think somebody had sent.
Is that on air?
No, that was a video that. Whitney Hayworth, formerly of Sunbelt, now with the PGA Tour. She had found out about it the year before in Louisiana.
Right.
And when I was doing the Barry, the Jay, and a couple other people in the...
Your Joe Cashman still kills me.
Nah, Kyle, come on, man. No, in the press box at Teague Moore Field, and she's over in the corner with her phone up just doing this. come on. I said, no, we can't. No. But the next year...
No media.
There was somebody had sent a message or... I don't remember exactly what it was, but I had to read it off of the phone about Barry announcing paint dry, or I don't remember. She might remember. I don't remember exactly what it was, but that was in that top right area in Coastal 2 years ago for the tournament. The banquet area, you know what I'm talking about, where we sat for most of the weekend.
Right. Somebody tweeted that they could listen to Barry narrating paint drying. And Barry tweeted a funny response, so you read it as Barry.
Okay. Paint drying was definitely, I don't remember exactly what it was, but that was the week where she hit the craziest mini golf putt I've ever seen in my life. Crazier than the one that Cashin hit when we played with him the year before.
I still have the picture on my phone of you laying on your stomach trying to pool cue it out from underneath one of those turtles that you have to try to hit it.
Yeah, like Roy McIlvoy in Tin Cup. He was a lot better at it than I was. Do you have a 4th of July meal?
See, I know this is going to come as a surprise to you, but I'm pretty basic. And, yeah, I know, everybody's real surprised. But
I would like a cheeseburger with only ketchup, mustard, and cheese. No, God help you if you put lettuce and tomatoes on a burger that he orders.
No, but I'm just a simple hot dog hamburger guy. Like, there's nothing better than just grilling out, having hot dogs and hamburgers, you get them good. There's nothing better. So I'm pretty simple when it comes to 4th of July. Now, my family used to do on the 4th of July, we used to go to my grandmother's house and we'd have hot dogs and hamburgers and make homemade ice cream, which is out of this world. I could eat that the rest of my life and be happy.
I'm going to guess that ice cream is better than the snow ice cream that we made in Boone about 4 years ago.
Yeah. Probably.
Which we try.
We gave it a shot.
I think Rachel actually made that.
Yeah, Rachel came, like she found the recipe or somebody gave her the recipe. And I don't think we got the right ingredients. But it was what? Me, you, Rachel, Millage. I think Millage was there.
We got the powdery snow with some. It wasn't rock salt because but something like that. And
it was something. And I don't think the
vanilla
snow,
extract.
Yeah, I don't think the snow was as fluffy as it needed to be. Everything wasn't perfect. It was good. We still ate it.
It came out as well as we could have hoped. I mean, you wouldn't get it at an ice cream place, but
no.
We'd have to pay for this. So
right. It's fine.
As far as a 4th of July meal, I will say that most of the time growing up, my best friends growing up, their family always did a big 4th of July party, and technically I'm cousins with them, so I would go over to their house, and you could see the fireworks from their house just about as well as any place in Cumberland because the park they shot them from was less than a mile away from their house.
Huh.
So we would always sit there, and their dad, who passed away a couple of years ago, he had this cassette tape of patriotic songs that he was very, very prideful in playing every year, and he would have to have it timed up perfectly where a certain song would play as the fireworks were happening. So we would do that for, let's say we did that for almost every year for, I don't know exactly how many years, but I know that they did hamburgers, dogs, and a couple of other things. There was always either a jar full of Tootsie Rolls or the M&Ms where everybody had to write down their guess of how many was in the jar and the winner got the jar, one of those deals. But that was nothing about the meal, though. It's burgers and dogs.
Yeah.
But I think just the company and the whole atmosphere just adds to it.
I've got to find – I realize this. In the time that I've been here – I haven't spent 4th of July in Statesboro. A lot of times we went up to Rachel's family because they do a big 4th of July cookout, and that was one of the few times that we could get up there. So we went up there for a couple years. We've done, I think I've been home for a couple of them, but I don't think I've been here. So I've got to find a 4th of July fireworks.
Well, there are 6 years you were doing summer ball.
That's true. Yeah, there's that. But I've got to find a fireworks spectacular, and I don't know where to go for that. I know I was talking to Hop yesterday. They do fireworks over at the rec department.
Yeah.
I got to find the biggest and best fireworks display.
One thing I will say about fireworks, look, regardless of how many you've seen, it is still special to look up and how all the colors will mix together. But having done minor league baseball for roughly 800 games, I've seen about 10,000 fireworks shows, so just about every combination you can conceive, I've probably seen on a Friday, a Saturday somewhere, or a 4th of July. In fact, once we were at Asheville, 2009, for 4th of July, and it's pretty close quarters at McCormick Field where the Asheville Tourists play, so the team was trying to get out of there quickly, and I was usually do post-game and get out of there. Packed up all my stuff, went down out front, bus was gone. Bus left me.
Oh.
So I took a $30 cab ride from the field back to the hotel.
How far away was the hotel?
About 15 miles.
Good grief.
Yeah. And there were some hang-ups. And I've talked to the manager next day. I appreciate this. And, sorry. Okay.
Oh, goodness.
Lost that game, too.
That's a shame.
Called third strike, and the outfielder that got called out, I mean, the ball was a foot outside. It wasn't even close.
Eddie Newsom.
No, but whoever it was tossed that guy out, tossed the manager out. This is when the game's already over.
Not him.
So he couldn't do the lineup card exchange the next day.
That's a shame.
That's a good memory, I guess.
I'm telling you, some of the rabbit holes we go down, it's worth the price of admission. It's free, so there it is. That'll wrap up this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation. We will continue next week. Next Tuesday will be same time, same place here from Alan E. Paulson Stadium. So for the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed, this is Colin Lacey saying so long, everybody.
You've been listening to Inside Eagle Nation, powered by Learfield, the official podcast of Georgia Southern Athletics.